You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
This absence today, Greta has arranged for a speaker on podcast, and you will hear more about that from Kevin a little later on. But I would like to ask everyone to come forward and sit at a table, especially during the podcast. Greta has set aside some mandalays, which I started mine earlier, to help keep our minds calm and our ears open during that period of time. So after the greeting would be a good time to come forward and have a seat. We're a small group, so you can do that. Or Kevin will remind you later when the podcast is about to start, okay? Today's theme is the humanistic spectrum. I looked up the word humanistic, as I often have to look up words after I come here. And I found three that I thought I would share. Having strong interest or concern for human welfare, values, and dignity. Another was a philosophical and ethical stance that emphasizes the value of agency of human beings, individually and collectively. And then there was this one, which is a little longer. A doctrine, attitude, or way of life centered on human interests or values, a philosophy that usually rejects supernaturalism and stresses on individuals' dignity and worth and capacity for self-realization through reason. My first introduction to a person who called himself a humanist was Dr. Robert Buckman, and I'm sure many of you will know him and know of him. He was an outspoken Toronto oncologist, also an author who sometimes was called a comedian, although I don't think he ever intended to be funny. That's my feeling, which was sort of why he was. I thought of him as a plain-speaking yet entertaining truth-seeker who had an amazing ability to disarm any God-fearing individual. And he did this publicly and frequently. And I think it's because he answered questions very directly and with pure honesty. Listening to Dr. Buckman on the radio opened a door to West Hill for me as I sought to learn more about his approaches. In 2002, he wrote a book called Can We Be Good Without God? Biology, Behavior, and the Need to Believe. If you're intrigued about humanistic ideas, particularly after today, you might want to consider reading this book.
This is where we center ourselves for today's perspective. We get reminded of our 3 G's, as we call it, grounded in our interconnectedness with each other and the planet and the universe. It's about the impact we have on everything around us. And it's about the consequences that our actions and choices have on this world. We're guided by love always, that superpower that Kara Quigley is going to talk about, inside all of us. That's when, given freely, can achieve the miracle that is no less than the transformation of the human spirit. Growing in wisdom as we open ourselves and our minds and our hearts to new sources of spiritual inspiration, discover new truths and incorporate those directly into our personal faith models, having the potential thereby to change our self-concept, our very identity, who we really are. And so I would ask you to take a moment to center yourselves as we prepare for today's...
for the first reading. As you listen to these readings, you are invited to consider where you might be and what you might be doing if there is no West Hill. From Roger Wosley's Patheus blog, The Holy Kiss. Too many of the growing crowd of those who are spiritual free agents are doing plenty of things to improve themselves. They're growing to some extent as self-helpers. They're meditating, doing yoga, lighting incense, wearing patchouli, toking Mary Jane, and reposting all sorts of pretty pictures on Facebook with cool quotes or feel-good aphorisms. They're doing their work, exploring some of their shadows, circling, and otherwise learning how to divorce themselves from their elders and traditions and become their authentic selves. Good for them. The trouble is, for too many of these spiritual unaffiliated, their spirituality begins and ends with them. In other words, what's good for them isn't good for us, the collective us, the community. You know, the other 7 billion people on the planet. Spirituality that is unrooted, divorced from lineage, or intentionally disassociated from anything organized, is about as useful as a cell phone without a battery or a QR code without a smartphone. Not so much. Offered as wisdom for the journey. May we walk in its light. Back-to-back readings. From Religion Dispatches. Are you SBNR, spiritual but not religious? By Kate Blanchard. What is most important for Lillian Daniels about Christianity is not its doctrines, narratives, sacraments, or even individual faith. It is community, the people who are stuck with you. What makes Christian community different from other kinds of community is the fact that it is shaped by a tradition of particular narratives and rituals and practices that, at least ideally, push back against self-serving consumer capitalist culture. It is for this reason the lack of commitment to being stuck with any particular community of sinners that the SBNR are particularly targets of her judgment. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
So you've seen in the backside of your bulletin, Kara Quigley is going to be our guest speaker today via podcast, speaking as she did to an Oasis group in the U.S. last month on the topic of the spectrum of humanism. You can see some of her credentials and bona fides there. She's from Tucson, Arizona, spent the last 13 years in Kansas, and has lots of religious degrees and certifications. She is a theologian for sure, and a religious scholar. She identifies as a Buddhist Christian, although she does have issues, just as most of we do, with definitions or with titles like that that try to tie you down. Of note is Oasis is supposed to be a secular organization, and secularism by definition supposed to be not spiritual, and therefore by definition don't do prayer. You'll hear her speak about this sort of issue, I guess, with that whole business of spiritualism and being a humanist and borrowing from religions at the same time. She asks the question, is Oasis ready to accept more spiritual people? That is to say, spiritual but not religious. She warns that this group of people, spiritual but not religious, is a real growing population, and it is frankly a contemporary reality, and she advises Oasis to recognize that that compatibility and to be open and inclusive to the spiritual. She has this master's degree with distinction from Trinity College Dublin in ecumenism is essentially the coming together of religions, the common ground, if you will. We've spoken about that here, and that's basically what it is. And like many of you here at West Hill, she takes an ecumenical approach to forming her own statement of faith or her own faith model. It's a blending of personal, relevant, philosophical components from various religions and other sources, just as we do here. Like most of us, her statement of faith is fluid. It changes from time to time, from day to day, she says, as new truths come to light. You have colored pens in hand, and you are encouraged to use your creativity to visually express your statement of faith as it manifests to you at this moment on this day. At the conclusion, you should give it away, take it home, or post it on the wall. Up to you. Kara Quigley speaks of being criticized by linear thinking Christians during her time in seminary. One of her colleagues declared, "I am a Christian. I am not willy-nilly," implying that she is willy-nilly by borrowing certain philosophies from other religions, including Christianity, implying that it is sort of an all or nothing. Either you are in or you are out. Where have we heard that before? She speaks of her love for Jesus Christ Superstar and her own personal views of that entity known as Jesus Christ. She respects all religions, but does not believe in any one of them. She has read and learned and knows too much to believe in any one of them. So sit back, find a place at the table if you want, or be comfortable in the back and listen to Kara Quigley in her podcast. The first 10 minutes will go be a little bit more scattered, but I'll tell you, after she's about 10 minutes into this, she drops gem after gem after gem. So I would encourage you to be really attentive at least after that first 10 minutes. We'll meet again at the end. Sit back and relax. There's not really a visual part of this. Peter has a photo of the speaker, but that's why you've got you don't have to sit where you can see the screen. Just open your mind and listen to what she has to say. Thank you. Go ahead, Peter.
From secular communities, empowered by reason and connected by compassion, this is the Oasis Network Podcast.
Now it is my absolute pleasure to be welcoming back for Oasis the absolutely fantastic Kara Q. She's talked to us about Hinduism. She's talked to us about Islam. She's a student of religion, lipstick aficionado, yogi. The list goes on and on of her innumerable talents. Today she's talking about something near and dear to all of us, which is the spectrum of secularism?
Spectrum of humanism.
Spectrum of humanism. So without further ado, Kara Q.
Thank you. This talk kind of comes out of my interaction with all of you. I have a tremendous love for this community, and I feel tremendously loved. And it's odd because there's also this strange gray area, and I'll tell you what that's about. Like, I look at your Facebook posts, and I read them, and I follow up with all of you, and I see what's going on, and then there'll be a post like, "I'm having a really bad day, I'm very sad," or "I had a panic attack today," or "I'm feeling depressed today," or "I just can't make it today, and I don't know what to do, but I wanted to reach out to somebody." So, right, I step into motion. This is what I do, right? So I get on the comments, and I start to type, and I say something like, "Well, I'm going to put you at the top of my prayer list, and I'm going to pray for you, I'm going to light a candle, and I'm going to hold you right here. and I'm going to think good thoughts for you, and I'm going to send it out into the ether and hope that everything transforms you and changes for you. Just as I'm about to hit the little reply button on that or enter, I think, wait a second. This is Oasis. I can't do that. Hold on a second. I have to respect people's boundaries. This is not a place to say that. So then I'm like, okay, delete, 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 delete. I'll be thinking of you. And now maybe for you that's all good, and that's okay, and you take that sincerely, and that's a really wonderful thing. But for me, it's like the laziest cop-out I could give. It's like I didn't do my work. I didn't do the biggest effort that I could for you. And yet, if you had said to me, I'll be thinking of you, I would take that, and it would be sincere, and I would hold it, and it would be great. So what can I do for you that will also fulfill in me what I need to do for humanity, which is to pray, which is to hold, which is to be of space, which is to be there for you on a level? And so I don't know. I'm a part of the spectrum. I am spiritual. I've been that way since I was 4. I'm not going to stop. I have tried to be an atheist. Trust me, I've tried. It doesn't work out so well, because then I see the sunset and I'm like, wow, it's So, where are we? And is Oasis ready to start welcoming more spiritual people? Because they're coming. We're kind of done with the religion thing. We got it. We're not into it anymore. But we are definitely into community, and we're definitely into people that understand that humanity is the pinnacle. And we're ready to be here. But can we be here? I don't know. Do we start a group for spiritual Oasis people? I don't know. I don't know. So let's just talk about it. So this particular part of my journey, and I've got about 19 different journeys, started in 2002 when I was accepted to Union Theological Seminary in New York City. It was a complete dream come true. This was one of the best seminaries in the United States. It was the most politically minded. It was the most liberal. Every great liberal 20th century theologian studied there, and all the great liberal theologies came out of there. Gay theology, Native American theology, Asian theology, LGBTQ theology, Black theology, womanist theology, feminist theology, eco-theology. I was there, and I don't know what I was going to come up with. I was going to be the best theologian of the 21st century. I was so ready to be there. I worked really hard. I got a 4.0 in my undergraduate, and I sat there in my dorm, and I thought, awesome. I made it to a really old school that's going to help me catapult somewhere into my crazy world that I can make sense of. During orientation, I don't know how many of you have been to seminary, but really you just talk about Jesus a lot, and you talk about your beliefs a lot, and it's a lot of Jesus, 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 and this is what I believe, and you kind of do it every half hour when you're meeting people. You have to have a statement of faith. And for me, it's kind of strange because my faith, or whatever I call it, my relationship to the source, has always been very fluid. So it could change from day to day. This was extremely frustrating for people. Like, how could you possibly write down something and publish it and then change? So, that's patriarchal thinking, by the way. So, orientation comes around, and we went the whole day saying all this kind of stuff, and that was great, and that was exciting. And then we get to the nighttime, and literally the head of the committee of orientation comes up to me at the seminary pub, and Union does have a seminary pub. And he extends his hand, and he says to me, I think you're full of shit, Kara, but I still like you. And I thought that was kind of strange. I mean, like, I identified as a Buddhist Christian. This was not weird to me. I'd read The Jew and the Lotus. This was a book. This was a thing. It was not something that was unusual. Combining is something Christianity had done. Like, where is this guy coming from? And I realized he had this idea that his singularity had a supremacy over my blending. That there was a supremacy to his tradition because it was one, because it was old. Because it came from this long line of linear thought, which if he had really studied, it actually didn't. But he thought it did. And so he felt that his truth was better than mine. And I was hurt by it. I thought it was kind of ignorant for such a liberal seminary. So then next week, we had luncheon with the president of Union Theological Seminary. It was all very formal. There were servers, like, in his office and everything. We met in small groups, so he got to meet every one of the new students. And he talked about his faith, you know, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. And we kind of went on around the table like we did, and I said I was a Buddhist Christian, and again it was like, oh, that's like the weirdest thing, and I just didn't understand how weird this could be. I was already weird. To me, this wasn't the weird part of my weirdness. So the president said that he had been studying Hinduism. We had a Swami coming to visit Union, and it was going to be great, and he picked up all these books, and he began to research, and I thought, oh, yes, we can talk to each other about this. So at the end of the luncheon, I went up and personally introduced myself, and I said, you know, I love Hinduism. I've been reading and studying about it for, it was just 2 years at that time, and I thought, wow, what a great opportunity for us to connect. I would love to have lunch with you. I'd love to talk with you about it, and I'm pretty sure you might incorporate some stuff about Hinduism in your life, because it really works. I mean, this stuff is like trying to even us all out and calm us down. It's awesome. And he said, oh, make no mistake. I'm a Christian through and through. I'm not willy-nilly. And, you know, I'd had enough therapy at this time, like, don't take things personally. Somebody's coming from their history. It's not talking to you, blah, blah, blah. But, like, his 6'4 frame suddenly became like Wilt Chamberlain looking over me like willy-nilly was definitely about me. That I had somehow picked this up, this idea, this blending out of nowhere. As if some girl from Tucson, Arizona had any right to develop her own faith. So I was hurt by that too. And to make an extremely long story short, I dropped out of seminary. I was done with the eye-rolling and the laughing and the constant belittlement of my faith because it wasn't singular. I thought that was kind of just really strange. I'm like, what version of Christianity are you studying? The one where it like plops down from the sky and that's how it ended up? The one where God's a Christian? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So after seminary, I moved to Kansas City. I sat on the couch and binge-watched probably Twin Peaks or something. And I knew that I needed a major life review. I knew I needed to figure out, okay, well, we sat around tables all day talking about what we believed, and it seemed that something I said sparked people off in some way. So what did I believe? What was it about this blending that was working for me? How did it all fit together? So I knew as a child I was very spiritual. You know, other kids were asked, you know, what are you going to be when you grow up? And they're like, oh, I'm a teacher, I'm a nurse, I'm a firefighter. I'm like, well, I just saw the movie Jesus Christ Superstar, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to marry Jesus. He was really hot. He was totally perfect. He sang really well. And he made me dance. So that was it for me. You know, I was with Jesus, and I talked to Jesus all day long, and we would just like would go to the bus stop together and play around, and it was fun. But as a 6-year-old, I really kind of got that, like, he died. And he died a really long time ago. So there was really no chance of us getting together. And believe it or not, this was a deep existential crisis for me as a 6-year-old. It's my parents. I mean, it was really difficult to know that I was not really going to ever be with Jesus. And so that, I think, really triggered this spiritual identity for me, that it wasn't about a body. It wasn't about this thing that's earth thing. It was something up there, something around here, something in here that was unseeable yet totally palpable. And so I lived my life that way. And then I got to be a senior in high school in Tucson, and we went to the Buddhist Center as part of a field trip. We were studying Hermann Hesse's Siddhartha, and we meditated. And when I meditated, I was like, oh, what's going on here? There's something really deep in here, something that's like this really filled up empty space, something dense, and yet, I don't know, I could push through it and bring something back. And it made me feel whole. And it didn't make me question myself anymore. And so at that point, I'm like, I'm going that direction. I'm going to look for that. So Buddhism and Christianity. I will always participate in any religious ceremony I'm invited to. I will always find the sacred in the religions that exist. I will always believe people when they tell me their beliefs. I will always hold space for them and consider it sacred. I have no problem with this. No matter how much knowledge I accumulate, it does not diminish my awe. And I'm okay with that. I love learning I love learning about religion, but I don't like believing in it. I know too much. I see too much. I can't possibly hook, line, and sinker take it all in. So as I've studied for the last 17 years, here's what I've kind of figured out about religion. I think religion as a whole, again, I'm being general, is trying to answer three key questions in our life. Where did I come from? Where am I going? That's question one. Question two, why do I feel bad about myself? What is it that I encounter in my life that makes me feel fractured? In what way do I not feel good enough or adequate enough? Something's happened here. There's been a wound. It's unavoidable. It's the human experience. That's question number two. Question number three. What can I do to mend that feeling? What can I do to become whole? Or basically, what can I do to feel good? Those are the three questions. So if I took the framework and the tenets and the structure of the religion and I just put that aside and I was left with thought systems that were dealing with these three questions and how to wrestle with them, if I pulled away from the skeleton itself, literally and figuratively, and focused on the philosophy, what would I have? More importantly, if I used a metaphorical rather than a literal interpretation, how could I open up the meaning of these philosophies so that they might be relevant to my life today? The literal translation degrades the whole purpose of the teaching. Literal translations create a power dynamic in which the believer must suspend reality and give in to a lie. It robs the soul of imagination and individuation, and it takes away from the human their greatest power, which is their consciousness. The metaphor is always more powerful and universal. It's eternal, with prismatic sides and whole spectrums of colors. It's an endless tool of teaching and learning. It is not something you stake your soul on. And most importantly of all, where do these philosophies come up short? What did they lack? What were their limitations and obvious contextual issues that could not possibly serve a single mother in the 21st century in America? Where were the modern day revelations and sacred texts that could speak to me? How could I have a spiritual life and take from religions of the world and do my own thing at the same time, which was my right as a human being? So I was looking at a life of spirituality. I could use ancient wisdom, but I could also forge new territory. I had to do what was real, and I had to do what was in the moment. And I knew that that could change at any time. And that's okay. It's called cyclical thinking, or matrilineal matriarchal. Spiritual. Meaning a fluid daily understanding of a connection to an external source of energy that is in relationship to me as a part of me and a mover of me. A way of seeing life as a part of a whole system, integrated, sometimes magical, and always whole. Engaging in the mystery, not always trying to define or get to an end. For me, sometimes this takes the form of prayer. Usually, it's me breathing in long breaths, hoping just to make it through the day. Always meditating, teaching meditation. Sometimes it's a trip to a Hindu temple. Sometimes it's an Easter vigil. I know, I actually do it. Sometimes you'll find me at a church or the Buddhist center. Sometimes you'll find me at a stoplight, just sending it all out. I'm at home in all of these places, but I cannot just take one, and that is my right. Especially as a woman, I can't take on a system that was developed without the understanding of the feminine realm. I have every right to pick and choose because these whole systems are anything but when it comes to the reality of day-to-day living in the modern world. The universality of Christ is kind of a joke when you're going through postpartum depression. All of those verses of the sleepless nights of Jesus waking up with baby really came in handy. Where's the verse about leaving him when he hits you? Where's the parable about the woman who points out her rapist on the Sabbath? Where is the book about the woman who fell in love with another woman and they lived happily ever together without a man at all? So you can't tell me that religions we have today are enough. I need more. And my cultivation of spiritual confidence, I know what I'm looking for. I know the tools to find it, and I won't stop till I get there. And sometimes I get there and I stay there for a while, and then I need something else. And that is my right. In losing religion, I felt a slight dip in my ability to find the sacred. Until one day on my front porch, I saw a tree, and there was no mistaking it. It was winking at me. And I realized that in worshiping the earth, I need look no further than what I see around me every single day. Moving to Kansas City, I experienced the seasons for the first time. New smells, new ways of rain, thunder that rolled on forever, changes in the clouds, angles of the sun, daylight savings time. We don't have that in Arizona. This is the Earth's way of communicating. It is science, and that's fine. But something deeper is happening for me. And I'm in communication with it as well. I have to realize that the Earth is in fact the only reason, and the very reason, for my existence. Without the Earth, I would die. And so I give gratitude daily to it. My spirituality is my essence, but the Earth has my utter soul. Something is in me, something surrounds me, and something pushes and pulls and guides me. That's my spirituality. I listen. When I place my hand on the heart of a client as I'm teaching them meditation, and I feel them and hear them take a real good breath for the first time, and I do it with them, there is a sense of connection like no other. And I cry almost every single time. And I don't care if that's professional or not. It's something that is necessary in the world we live in today. There is a powerful energy source in the human being. And to be frank, my deepest sense of spirituality comes from hanging out with humans. Humanism. This is my definition. I purposely did not look it up. I don't need some system to define it for me. I've got it right here. The understanding that the human is a source of great power, inborn with the ability to heal themselves, transform their lives, create effective change and good for all of the other fellow human beings and planet Earth through love. A sense of awe and oneness in one's own being when making intentional, heartfelt contact with other beings. That, for me, is humanism. My spirituality follows philosophies sometimes attached to religions that promote personal empowerment and healing. Worship calms me, meditation keeps me sane, ritual provides a structure that for whatever reason satisfies me. But listening to a human being's story is something that is so incredibly powerful for me. For some reason, I give off a pheromone that says, "Please tell me your deepest, darker secret that you've never told anyone else." I have no idea what it is about my presence that makes people do this, but I have heard some pretty incredible stories. And I have listened with deep empathy. And I have listened in connection with my own pain. And I have held hands, I have held heads, I have held bodies. And it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. We enter a thin space together where the senses are awakened and everything is clear. And there is a truth that is undeniable, that without words, we can connect. In all of these times, I am aware of how holy it is to talk to each other. I am also aware that no religion of the past has a monopoly on what is sacred in the present. Don't let anyone tell you that miracles only happened back then, and don't let anyone tell you that a miracle is some insane defying of science that is completely impossible. Miracles happen when we choose to claw our way out of damaging thinking and commit to a healing process. A miracle is the transformation of the human spirit. This is recovering from trauma. This is the scarring process of the open wounds of life. Becoming whole. More importantly, the decision to become whole is a miracle. I do not believe in the miracle stories of the Bible, but I do believe in their meaning. I do not believe in the divinity of Jesus. I happen to think he was a human. And whether he existed or not is not the point, and I don't really care either way. I do think it's extremely damaging, however, to make him divine. To make this teacher so unobtainable as to only think that gods have the answers and only sons of them can do the right thing is to reinforce our bad feelings of inadequacy about ourselves, which we would have anyway without any religion. Religion did not invent our lack of self-worth, it just capitalized on it and made it a major vein of its own belief, by continually providing solutions to heal and yet keeping the wound open at the same time, thus perpetuating a codependent relationship. And we'll take your money too. Religion takes all the power of the human and ascribes it to God. Religion as a power structure fears the power of the human. It wants you to externalize, to leave you weak, insecure, and beholden to its peripatetic solutions, giving you just enough to satiate from time to time, but hungry enough to keep coming back. And we'll take your money too. The system I accept is the human. All of its glorious, imperfect, and magical mess, I accept myself, non-egoically. We have within us power that religions want to steal. We are the ones who are the healers, the sages, and the leaders. Imagine what we can do if we recognize the power within us. Love is our superpower. It is the kryptonite to any oppressive system. It is our ruby slippers. It has always been with us, right there in front of us, ready to take action. Love is the one thing you can do on an individual basis, that absolutely has the potential to affect the whole. When you love someone in a moment, they are less apt to turn around and then be an asshole. If someone is loved by just one person, I guarantee you they have a fighting chance. The more we believe in our power, the more the systems will fracture. The more we listen to each other and use our great hammer of compassion and leveler of reason and wisdom, the more the need to export our power will become senseless. We can build a great oneness with the very things we have within us. Our ability to halt our own self-destruction collectively and personally may actually be our greatest gift. Humanity is the most real church out there, and while I'm not sure I would worship it, I am in awe of it each day, and I get great spiritual moments looking into someone's eyes and hearing their deepest desires for their life. I can't wait to see what happens when I believe in them, and I believe in their ability and imagination. I believe in you. I believe in Oasis. I believe in this community. And I certainly can't wait to see what happens. I love my community, and I really hope I have a place at the table. I think I know I do. But just be prepared that there's more of us coming. And we wish you no harm. And we don't want to change your minds. We agree with almost everything you say. But for some of us, we just need that little moment for ourselves because we feel it. And it doesn't make us crazy. I don't care if I'm weird. Thank you for allowing me to speak and express this. And I promise I will not hit send if I accidentally say I'll be praying for you. Thank you so much. Namaste.
We've got some time for questions. If you've got questions, raise your hand. You mentioned that in your view.
Just take a moment to digest what you've heard. Humanism, that wonderful potential inside all of us for personal empowerment and healing. To her, the miracle is the transformation of the human spirit. We symbolize that by tying a ribbon on our tree of transformation on the back wall. Love is our superpower because we know when someone feels loved, they're less likely to do harm to themselves or others. Go out and use your superpowers. Give your love as often as you can. Transform human spirit. Do not apologize for taking pieces or of philosophies, of different religions, finding your truths from different sources to build your own faith model, do not apologize. Go out and be unapologetically willy-nilly. Thank you.
We can stand one last time today together and sing. As we leave this place together, may we continue to live with care each day. May we value each other, show compassion, live love in all our ways.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.